rapidly implement feature improvements to the system and get them into production very, very fast. We are the masters of our own destiny in that respect. Several times we can identify these faults very rapidly. Can, but fundamentally you can't, is the short answer. Basically, it's more to do with how websites work rather than anything special, because when someone clicks on a link on a web page, it's got nothing to do with our server, it's on their PC site, blah blah blah. So yes, we can, but due to the nature of the beast, open source tends to be a better fit with Unix servers for a variety of reasons. I'm probably not really sure what those reasons would be, but it just grew. We had small problems that needed fixing. We fixed those problems. The best tool for fixing those problems, source. The production servers, the development test servers are Solaris. So it doesn't cost us anything extra to use it. And Oracle does have a lot of features that are not, to the best of my understanding and knowledge, currently available that we use in those tools. The other problem we have is that because the site is written in, it would be a major job to retrofit to. We've got up on the production system, we've got four servers. One's a F5 failover device. We use that in a failover mode rather than load balancing, mainly to do with the site. They're currently Sun V440 for speed reasons. So we have the three identical servers. We split the Apache Cold Fusion lives on one server, if you like. Oracle lives on the second, so that we separate the two. Having said that, the three servers are identical. So basically, those two are essentially the prime of the others. So if we lose the other two, we can get Oracle up and running in about 10, 15 minutes. So. Not that I'm aware of. We're running Oracle 8i something or other. 8i? Yeah, fair enough. I'm not a DBA, so...
It was definitely Nagios, because it's... The way it, its current incarnation is configured is...
Tedious,
yes. It's not all that intuitive. It makes sense from a programming perspective, but it's lousy.
If I can get a quick show of hands, because I'm very curious, and I've been wondering for the last day, how many government employees are here? Put your hands up. All right, got you spotted now. No. how many vendors are here? Cool. And we've got a journalist that I know of. I'm going to see, unfortunately, a bit of console up here while it boots up, so I apologise in advance. Today is the hat of Linux Australia. I'm currently Vice President of Linux Australia and was President for 2 years. And with that in mind, I'm going to take the suit off, at least the jacket. So I have to put that back on this afternoon when I present on behalf of Volante, which is also the primary sponsor of today. I've been the open source strategist. Questions about community stuff versus corporate stuff, very happy to chat about it. That have grown up in very, very good times, or three, that have grown up in very good times and have enough time to get all idealistic and such, such as myself. And it's both a blessing and a bane. The biggest problem with being such a proud country is that we find it hard to learn from countries that we perceive to be, and went to the Software Livre conference. Software Livre means free software. And there was a three for EU, very, very briefly, in a couple of different areas. I believe that we're actually more similar to a lot of these developing countries in terms of ICT than we are to, say, the US, definitely, but EU and other sort of developed countries. In terms of IP, we tend to be major importers of IP, not so much exporters. Well, at this point, we certainly don't export a lot. So we're really protect federal pushes for open source or support of open source. The US, I haven't seen as much from federal, but there's certainly a lot of local stuff happening. Whereas in countries like Brazil, countries like Malaysia, a lot of the developing countries, there is a federal push for open source because they see it as being beneficial to them. On a report from Kate Lundy, there were apparently 2/3 of our deficit is IT related, on any religious belief, whatever, any of these things. But ultimately what you're judged on, because no one knows these things unless you come out and start talking about them, You're actually judged on what you do. It's a natural meritocracy. This allows a lot of opportunities for people. For instance, in the Sydney Links users group, we have he's 14 now. This kid, who's a bit of my to develop his skills and really shine. Whereas at school, he's just another kid. The lack of equal opportunities given to individuals, which I think Australia counts in that as well, to be able to counter that somewhat. Australia is, and this is similar to countries like Brazil and some of the other developing countries, we are multilingual. I actually get really narky every time I see a Pretra product you can't get Australian spelling for. But with open source you can. So it is not strong enough, I don't think, in recognising the other side. We do tend to listen a lot more to big companies, and we do tend to listen to the big advocacy groups that aren't necessarily representative of Australian interests. But anyway, moving on. So in regards to a lot of these, I believe we have more in common we'll take away and put into our own strategy and policies. I met a lot of ministers of IT that were really impressive people. The Cuban minister of IT, in his speech, it was very, very powerful, and he said that the people's data has to be accessible to the people. This concept of taking government data and putting it into a proprietary format and then making the people pay for it was a really, really powerful statement, and certainly something I thought worth passing on successes, particularly with what Agmo is doing. So it's been pretty amazing. But the whole budget staying local is a really hot topic. One of the African countries, I can't remember which one it was, but their Minister of IT said that he had this tiny budget and he couldn't afford to actually have really any of that budget leave the country, an important issue, again, coming back to our deficit. But addressing the digital divide was to turn around a $1.2 billion import economy to a $2 billion export economy. That's a pretty huge thing, and if we could do a similar sort of thing here, I think we'd find ourselves way ahead. A couple of interesting points about Brazil. They don't... People talk about some countries that are creating their... Which anyone... Well, it's very easy to get involved in. It's very easy to get... As before. Okay, Sergio Amadeo is the Minister of ICT over there. He's a very funny fellow. He's one of those politicians that gets up and talks and then goes for beer with you afterwards. It's fantastic. And he was very passionate about open source and how it was good for the people. And he's actually been sued by my developing countries. He got in a lot of trouble and he loved it. They're very, very naughty over there. They're just putting telecentres everywhere, government-sponsored telecentres to get people using computers, gaining the skills, able to get technical skills, all this kind of thing, and able to participate online, online services, meeting people, all the kind of stuff. And banks is obviously another one. But the biggest thing for them is turning around control and balance, which comes... So the developed community and the people within the government that are pushing this space know each other, they speak regularly, they're able to learn the lessons, they're able to use the right people, they're able to find... And, I mean, if someone comes to them and says, oh, hey, can we do this for you? It's very easy to find out whether they're actually capable of delivering that. So that's certainly something that we need to learn how to do here very well. Talk to you later. China's a fascinating place. I've lived China, Korea, Japan, Alliance, and I'll speak a bit more about this later, but there is this massive gap between East and the rest of the world in the open source world. You'll have, you know, European, South American, American, Australian, all of these developers working together on projects that live in Japan and are open source developers, and they keep coming back with these amazing projects. It's been to an Asian country, will understand what I mean about face. But also education. There's a huge need to roll out infrastructure to broader areas of China and be able to deliver better education. So that's certainly another thing. I thought this was so beautiful when I found it. The Chinese Youth Daily proclaimed, the rise of Linux is like the powder. Zhongwen was a project there run by the government there. They rolled out 80,000 systems or something like that. And what their aim was to have one PC for every two kids. Hello.
New South Wales is very happy that they're going to soon have one PC for six children.
Woohoo! That's exactly my point. Dicks in New South Wales. But yeah, it was a massive project and they managed to pull it off quite well. The stuff they're doing, the Malaysian Minister of IT was fascinating to listen to speak. But this idea that the risks to national competitiveness arising from software vulnerabilities and potential lock-in through proprietary software have also prompted the government to consider alternative solutions. That just sounds very, very safe. But when you look at what they're aiming for, open source, 60% of web servers, 30% of office infrastructure.
There's an opportunity there to export all the tech here in
big national holiday to Malaysia. Anyway, Malaysia I found very fascinating with their attitude. Excuse me. I had a drink of water, possibly. Thank you. The most fascinating panel I saw, stunned. They're looking back at him saying, can you not see that this has already happened? Theoretically, it doesn't matter once it's already, you know, it's already working for us. But it was very, very interesting. South Africa, I will only touch on because I don't know very much, but I did want to bring up a few things that will look very familiar in the next slide. I mean, they have serious infrastructure requirements to schools, to other, and it would be fantastic to give the youth a way to get really involved in their languages again. But anyway, and there's lots of other African countries getting involved in that kind of stuff. Now, just for a bit of controversy, so Australia, we have infrastructure requirements. We have a huge demographic, geographic area. A story about how in Papua New Guinea, in this classroom, they had to teach people their computer studies over the infrastructure to have access to those services. The more services you put online, the more a gap you're creating between the people who can have computers and the people who can't have computers to have the same opportunities. So therefore we have this widening digital divide here that we're still at that. We have a huge amount of local resources that are being unused. So what org, you have OSIA, who can talk more about sort of the business side of things. There's a lot of organisations out there that are very, very willing to help out. I wouldn't say necessarily going directly to some developers would help you out necessarily, because sometimes they're very, very focused on developing and don't necessarily back for you. Local companies with global expertise have access to, for the Dole scheme, community code takes people that are on the Dole, want to learn skills, and it helps mentor them to get involved with the open source community and learn maybe programming or documenting skills or project management skills. They're both very good ways that are arresting the skills deficit, as well as using the Work for the Dole scheme, as well as trying to arrest the... A few opportunities and challenges I really want to throw at you. My talk's a little different, but we can be a leader in terms of giving back to the community. Some of these countries aren't necessarily giving back their code, participating as much. And the other really big opportunity for us is acting as a bridge between this East and West. And that's already starting to happen, but with, you know, a bit more support, that can happen very, very well. We can help define global policy on network, because they would love to see that, and they don't have necessarily as well. And we've already seen people work around this. We've already seen ways that you can do this. There's been a few good examples just in this conference alone, a few Google searches, and find a lot more. We have a challenge to collaborate with and learn from the open source community. Just briefly, with what I've done with Volante, I'm trying to take what we do well are ignored largely because people don't understand time. This is quite long, so bear with me. But this is actually from the Civil Society Declaration from WSIS. Software is the cultural technique of the digital age, and access to it determines may you participate in the digital world. Free software, with its freedoms of use for any purpose, studying, or negatively regulated, but free software should be promoted for its unique, but not necessarily getting you fired up, and I think that's what we need right now. Thank you very much.
All right. Nothing like a break to let all of that information sink in. That's the plot of the next global open source conference. So once you serve outside, in the usual place.
What's the difference between us and
there is a cluster.
Excuse me, my.